Welcome to The Blind Spot, a podcast where we explore human instinctual drives through the lens of the Enneagram, nonviolent communication, and resonant healing with personal stories from individuals living real human lives. My name is Karen Nance, self-res, social, sexual blind, 3-wing-2 with 3-7-1 trifix and ENTP cognitive preferences. I hope you enjoy these stories. Welcome to The Blind Spot. I'm really excited to be launching out into the new project with Denzel on to what we're calling Affinity. And what the Affinity project is about is to try to learn what is it that causes attraction between two people, and what is it that causes that affinity to sometimes loosen and even end. And our hope with this project is that we can help people to see how typology can really give us deeper insight into our own patterns, specifically in relationship. And we're very, very grateful to have Marlene here to be our very first interview candidate about some really tender things that are going on in her life right now. So we're going to have Marlene be anonymous, and we're going to be sharing things about her story that started back in 2006. And Marlene has been profiled by Denzel, and she is an INFP, and she's been on an Enneagram journey. And at this point, we're looking at both Enneagram points 9 and 4 as we continue to explore. And we don't have a sense of her instinctual stack. And as we go through these interviews, you'll see that we may or may not get to all aspects of typology, because to do this in simply an hour often doesn't give us enough time. But Denzel and I have spent some time with Marlene. Denzel has spent an hour in a formal profiling session with her, and we've both spent about an hour speaking with her offline and learning more about her story. So it's just important that we want our audience to know that profiling is something that often emerges over time. So we often tend to use the terms best fit type because we may or may not be accurate with Marlene's Enneagram and instinctual stack at the end of this episode. But our goal is to help the typology community see how we can combine our knowledge of Myers-Briggs and Enneagram and instinctual drives to get deeper insight into what might be happening in a specific scenario. And relationships are going to be the goal of what we're talking about. So if you enjoy listening to how Denzel and I are going to work with Marlene, we invite you to reach out, and please, we'll have the contact information in the show notes on how you could be the next interview candidate. And today we're just interviewing Marlene as a solo artist, but we also want to be able to have couples and people who want to work out a stuck point in their lives with us together. So we're opening up to all those possibilities for now. So before we launch into Marlene's story, I just wanted to pause, let Denzel say hello again to the audience and introduce himself. And thank you.
Yeah, hello. If you do not know me, my name is Denzel Mensa. I'm an ENFJ 9-wing-1, social, sexual. I'm also a life, personal development, and relationship coach. I have my own YouTube channel underneath Denzel Mensa, where I talk about psychology, personality psychology, interpersonal dynamics, and philosophy, you know, religion, faith, anything that pretty much comes to mind. And I'm really excited to be here once again, and especially to try and understand and dissect Marlene and her situation a little bit more with my trusty sidekick, Kara. So, yeah.
And Marlene, I'd love to give a moment for you to introduce yourself and just share with us, how does it feel to be here as our first interview? How do you feel about being dissected right now? And what's alive for you in the moment?
Hi, I'm Marlene, INFP, and I am suddenly nervous now. I don't know. I'm just afraid that I won't have, like, my mind will go blank and I won't have any answers. So
yeah,
hopefully you can trigger me if I go blank.
Yeah. And sometimes that happens, you know, especially when we're talking about something that brings up a lot of emotional intensity. That whole going blank is a perfectly normal nervous system response because it's just saying that it's a little bit too much, that the system's been overloaded and it's a protective response. So I just want you to know that that's perfectly understandable and that your blankness is welcome here. So Marlene has shared with us a little bit about the story of her most recent relationship. And so I'm going to go ahead and summarize for the audience. And the relationship that we're talking about today, unfortunately, Marlene is in the exit phase of this relationship. Her relationship started in 2006, where they began to date and had met through a dating site. And it was about until 2010 where they actually began living together and Marlene had moved in with him. And their relationship went along in this way until about 2017 when things started to become a little bit more complicated because there was a woman that he had become acquainted with that originally he had hoped Marlene could help because Marlene also works for the YWCA Women's Center at the time. And over the course of the relationship, she ended up not working with this woman, and the woman ended up continuing to have a lot of dialogue with her partner. And so through happenstance, as often happens, she had discovered that on his phone that there was a large volume of text messages that had happened at that point in time. And it really rose some significant fear inside of Marlene. And so Marlene, I think that I'd like to just pause for a moment and just travel back to that moment in 2017 when you realized that your partner was having significant conversations with a woman that wasn't you. And at the time, were these platonic or were these intimate texts that you first had seen?
They were platonic for the most part, except that I could see that she was trying to pull him in. It just seemed like anything that he responded with was very neutral. But yeah, she was trying to pull him in.
So he continued to respond even though he wasn't necessarily oversharing or doing anything that you felt was overly intimate. Is that what I'm hearing?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So I think that this is a great opportunity to even talk about this concept. And Denzel, I'd love to pass it to you. And I'm just curious about, you know, when we talk about infidelity, of course, there's physical infidelity, and then there's emotional infidelity. And I was wondering if you might just speak for a moment on how do you define with your clients when you're speaking with them as to whether a boundary has been crossed and what kind of advice do you give when we're looking at both, is this my own internal reactivity or is there something going on here that I want to talk about and how do I bring that up? I'm curious to hear how you work with that with clients. I think it's pretty common.
It is. And I think it's insanely nuanced. It's almost like over the years of as I've dealt with more and more and more different wild relational situations, then it's like each one has its own way of approaching it. But the trend really is getting in tune with, first off, what exactly are the lines for yourself? Like what things are bothersome for yourself? You know, like there's some people who I know that I knew someone pretty much who her partner, they had just, you know, started getting together or whatever. And then an old friend of his or like an acquaintance of his came around and she like called him by like a nickname. It wasn't even anything really like, you know, actually like super suggestive or anything. Just like a blankster, you know, like just called Stir. And then, but this male did not say, like he didn't flirt back or anything, quote unquote. Flirt with, you know, quotes, because it was just like, oh, hey, you know, whatever. But the original partner had said that she was glad that he didn't feed into it because she felt like even though that person was quote unquote flirting with him, like it would have been disrespectful if he like fed back into it. And, you know, for other people, it would have been like, oh, well, no, it's just a nickname. And plus they were friends before. So, you know, like what really is the issue? But everybody has like their own kinds of like interpretation. So, you know, in such a situation, like I would ask like Marlene, like, okay, so it's interesting that you are able to identify that you said it was like platonic, but what might have exactly like triggered you about this? Like, was it because you were able to see the potential? Was it because it, even though it was platonic still on his end, like you could see that he was still giving her room to continue and you felt like it was going to like explode into something? Or I don't know, like, you know, there's a lot that might go into that. And then secondly, what I would also ask is like, what type of partner is the person, you know, like, even though they might like be interacting this like platonic way, like what makes you as the partner to this person maybe kind of like become a little bit extra cautious or an extra like careful, you know? So like there's a lot more at like play there, because there's so many different levels to how different couples approach these types of situations. And yeah, like I said, it's very nuanced, but like that, those are some of the questions that I would then like go into, like, well, let's define it for you and yourself. Like, how does this couple define infidelity, and like, where does it start? Where does it end? You know, what are the deal breakers? And everything always has to become like a conversation before anything.
Yeah. And the one detail that I didn't share was that these two had dated just out of high school prior to his marriage. So there was a remote romantic history that I'm imagining was about 20 years ago, maybe, Marlene, at this time. Or do you want to go ahead and respond to what Denzel was sharing, or correct me if I was wrong in the reading of that?
Yeah, it would have been like 85. So maybe even prior to 85.
So that was about 30 years. Okay. Yeah. Since they had been in romantic relationship. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a friend who all of a sudden they're sort of reconnecting around her issue that he's giving her support with. And now there's a lot of communication happening. And what you specifically had said when you were sharing this story was, I cannot describe the frantic feeling inside of myself when I saw all of these messages. So Marlene, why don't you share a little bit more about what it was in that moment that was alive for you? And had you ever had experiences, I'm going to call it jealousy, you know, in that moment, it seems very normal that you would be experiencing some amount of jealousy. And I'm curious if that's how you would describe it, and if this was a familiar experience to you, or if this is the very first time you'd ever had an experience of intense emotion that I'm labeling jealousy, but feel free to correct me if you would call it something different.
I definitely had relationships in the past that were, the partner was cheating. So it would have triggered back to those things. Numerous things are coming up for me. I don't know that I would have said jealous. It was more needing to know and needing to understand what was happening, feeling a bit foolish, these interactions have had to have happened over quite a period of time. And how was I not aware?
Yeah, I think that's great. And that makes so much sense that you had an experience of partners cheating on you in the past. And I think that it's just important to name that, you know, at this point, Marlene, you're in midlife, correct? I think you said you were around 50. And at that point in life, you know, we've had quite a few relationships by this time, many of us. And if you've had relationships where you have been deceived and you have been cheated on, that's basically a trauma. There's going to be an imprint on the nervous system because it actually happened. You actually were cheated on. So when you're going to see this string of messages, especially going back to your Myers-Briggs type, where we know that introverted sensing is in that tertiary function. So it's a place where there's memory, and memory is something that's there, but it's maybe not as sophisticated as introverted feeling and extroverted intuition. And I think it's also important to remember that when extroverted intuition is also high up in the stack, we have very active imaginations. And sometimes those imaginations can take us towards brilliant, wonderful, positive ideas. We might call that brainstorming. And sometimes extroverted intuition can imagine worst case scenarios, especially when being driven by a 10-year-old introverted sensing that can easily be a little wounded and childlike in its 10-year-old function. And so we get whipped back into that painful memory, and there can be this very normal tendency to jump into that worst case scenario thinking. And it sounded like that's what maybe came up for you in that moment. Does that track?
Yes, except that what was written in front of me didn't confirm, like it was kind of conflictual because what I was reading seemed very bland and run of the mill and platonic. And yet it felt like an invasion. It felt like an infidelity for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm just naming that extroverted sensing is 7th out of 8 in your stack. So similarly to me, who has it 8 out of 8, like really being able to drop in and know what is actually happening in the present moment in like a factual felt sense can be hard for those of us that have extroverted sensing lower down. And I want to pause, and Denzel, what is coming up for you when we start to look at this in terms of her typology and her history of having been cheated on before? And that's living in that introverted sensing.
Yeah, it's not yet. I think that a lot of what comes up is that FISI, so that introverted feeling and introverted sensing, as you were saying, Kara, where you're remembering exactly how you felt each time that you've been cheated on. And so now it's almost like you're seeing the possibility of, you know, okay, yeah, this is platonic, whatever, but there's still history here. And okay, am I like, I've been naive in the past. Am I being naive right now? Like, there's a lot of questions that you might be having. And then maybe even something going further, you know, you start to think to yourself like, oh, there's some sort of like self-doubt that could be going on, you know, that could be coming from the extroverted thinking as an inferior function. Like, oh, I'm not usually used to, like, you know, being able to accomplish and get the things that I want in life. I wonder if this is another situation where I'm not able to, like, maybe I got the guy, but I'm not able to sustain this. You know, I'm not able to actually like show up the way that I need to. I'm not assertive enough to like keep going and do what I have to do in order to keep this. And so maybe there's like some uncertainty there that's probably like showing up. Whereas like then you might start to think, you know, but then maybe this other person is able to fill in what I'm unable to do, you know, and like there's just a lot of like thoughts that could be assumed in that way.
Exactly. And that was my question when I talked to him, like, what are you getting from these interactions? I need to understand. But he could never, he didn't want to, or he didn't know what he was getting out of it. And he couldn't tell me or didn't want to tell me. Also, it triggered the, like the crazy making of the past, like the denial in my past relationships. And so the doubt and the trying to figure out of, you know, the in the past, when they denied that they were messing around, like I had to find evidence in order to know that I was right. And so that stuff all came up too.
So in asking what are you getting from these interactions, I'm curious, did you have an expected answer? Did you have any assumptions of like, oh, I think I know what it is, but I just want to see if you're going to say it? Or did you literally have like no idea? Did you feel
no
like,
idea.
Yeah.
I felt like, what am I doing wrong? How come I can't feel whatever this need is?
And do you feel like if he had told you, honestly, I just hadn't talked to her in a long time and we were pretty good friends, back then before everything happened. And I was just happy to hear from her. And, you know, she's just, as you of all people would understand, an individual, and nobody can replace her, just like nobody can replace you, because you are also an individual. And yeah, I just wanted to, like, you know, catch up, talk to her. And it was just nice. It's been a while. But yeah, everything has been platonic. She's kind of tried to, like, you know, step over some things, and I just kind of sidestep and, you know, keep it pretty, like, whatever. But I do, you know, like, she was one time at one point, like, an important part of my life, and I do still care about her as a person. So I think that's what it is. How would you have responded to that?
I can't say for certain because I'm not back there, but yeah. I think that would have given me a bit of peace and allowed me to carry on. I worked with males. I had a couple of male friends that were really good relationships. So, and completely platonic. I could have maybe relied on though that information about myself to believe that that's what it was. And it probably would have given me peace, but leaving it up in the air and not knowing, it just allowed my mind to keep replaying and circulating and doomsdaying. And it was just painful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that is a great example of extroverted intuition going, like, to the dark side, because it's like, you know, whenever I get scared, I know that my extroverted intuition can get really, really colorful and sort of be off to the races. And I think it's important to remember that your introverted intuition is in the sixth function, or what we call the critical parent role. So it's something that you're going to go to when you're defensive. So whenever we're scared and whenever we're triggered, the difference between the extroverted intuition and the introverted intuition is that introverted intuition kind of takes us to one singular idea. And it sounds like in this case that the fear really took you to that singular worst case scenario idea. Whereas if it's higher up in the stack, it may not be as likely to be used from a defensive stance. Is that tracking for you also, Denzel? And I'm just curious, you have introverted intuition in that second function. And I'm just curious, how would this situation have been for you? You kind of painted these two scenarios. If you were to imagine how you might experience it, if you were in that scenario, how would it be for somebody with your stack, which is different?
Yeah, definitely can't speak for all ENFJ, but if I was to, like, try to, like, trend it, I would see it kind of being, I love that, you know, Marlene actually asks, because I think that's the biggest thing, like, asking, like, I just want to know, like, what is this per se? And then, you know, it becomes, like, frustrating if the person's like, oh, I don't know. Because now, I don't know if you did this, Marlene, but for me, what I would try to do is I would try to, like, get in my partner's mind. Like, okay, well, if you don't know, let's see if we can, like, if I can guide you to the answer. Like, this is, let's start over here. Like, you know, here's an assumption. Like, maybe it's because, well, you haven't talked to this person in a while, like, you know, and you know, whatever, like, and it's maybe, like, you are worried about this person, or maybe they're stroking your ego in some way. Like, wow, I must be the one who got away with this girl after all. And so, like, I want, like, you know, like, so I'll start throwing out, like, some ideas, which I feel like extroverted intuition can probably do too. Like, I think when I think of extroverted intuition, it's almost like, okay, I know that there's an elephant in the room. But it's an invisible elephant, which is very ironic. So I'm going to just start throwing paint all over. And once I splash it in one area, I'm going to splash part of the elephant. And it's like, oh, then you just start throwing more and more paint until the whole thing kind of, like, becomes clear. And for introverted intuition, I see it more as, like, instead of, like, splashing paint, like, all over the place, it's kind of like it's more pointed, and it's like feeling, like, you know, like five blind men on an elephant kind of thing. Like, oh, I have the tail. Oh, I have the tusk. I have ears. Hey, guys, I think it's an elephant. They're both kind of, like, arriving at the same thing, but, like, in a different way. So I'd imagine, like, you know, like, but yeah, as an ENFJ, I feel like I would mainly be trying to get into the person's like head, almost to the point where it's like, I understand why you probably did it more than you might even understand, but I want to see if it resonates with you, because until I get that SE confirmation, like, oh yeah, that's it, then I won't really fully trust it. So yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing that's coming up for me while I was listening to you talk, Denzel, is that I think it's important to remember that introverted feeling is not in our top four functions. Mm-hmm. We operate more easily from like, what's going on for that other person? So I'm wondering for Marlene, who has it as her hero function, it might be really hard to imagine that you don't know what you're getting out of it or why you might be doing it. Right. Like, I saw that you were leading this from somebody who actually doesn't know what might be up for them. Where, mm-hmm. like, I know for myself with introverted feeling, seventh function, like, I actually have to use introverted thinking. I have to kind of, like, map my way to how I feel. And I often call it echolocation, where it's super helpful if people ask me, hey, I'm wondering if you're feeling this because you were needing that. Like, this is why I love nonviolent communication. Whereas I think for people who have introverted feeling as, you know, one of their top two functions, that might seem like a strange exercise because they know exactly how they're feeling, or like they, you know, have a lot of confidence there. And we all tend to project onto others that their internal reality is like our internal reality. So I'm just imagining that if I did lead with introverted feeling and I really knew what my feelings were because it's my hero function, that I might get really destabilized by somebody who can't land on that. How is that for you to hear, Marlene?
Absolutely. I couldn't understand. How could you not know? So you must be lying to me. And I didn't have the sophistication to ask questions beyond to try to figure out any further. I was just kind of like throw my hands in the air because I don't know what else to do.
Yeah. And when you say like, I didn't have the sophistication, I think it's important to remember that when you were sharing this with me, you know, you said, I cannot describe the frantic feeling inside of me. I confronted him. So that demonstrates how much emotion was in the system. And when we're very emotional, we sort of lose access to those more skillful ways of talking about things at times. And, you know, we're saying that we're kind of playing with, are you type 9 or are you type 4? I also just want to highlight that I heard you say, like, what am I doing wrong? Like, what am I lacking? What are you getting from her? This is very much coming from that, what I would label as a 0.4 place of envy. Like, I must be less than, you know, there was like that automatic default thinking when you got triggered. And I think that nines, you remember, they're positivity types, whereas fours are emotional realness. So in that moment, when I was hearing both of you describe it, I was chuckling because I'm a competency type. So I'm just watching and my emotions aren't triggered right now. And so I'm just mapping. I was seeing Denzel sort of approach it from this positivity type way, like, well, maybe it's just this or maybe it's just that. Whereas when I was hearing you experience it, Marlene, there was a lot of like emotional realness, you know, real emotional intensity. And I confronted him. And how can you not know what you're feeling? Like your feelings were really activated in that moment. So I'm just naming that there's just a difference in how we all experience things right there. Okay, I'm going to take us to the next part. So, you know, he said, what do you want me to do? And I said, well, if it's innocent, then I'll try to accept it. Okay. So it sounds like that was sort of like a chapter that closed for that moment. Was there anything else you wanted to say about this piece, or can we move on to sort of what happened next?
Just like he really sounded like he was at a loss, and it wasn't the what can I do wasn't with attitude. It was like questioning, like what can, you know, what can I do to make this better?
Yeah. He had a lot of regret, it sounds like, and he really wanted to support you, it sounds like, in that moment.
I guess.
Okay. You didn't see it that way? It didn't feel like that?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I don't know if regret's the right word, but wanting to make it better. Yes. Wanting to make it better.
There was like this longing to soothe your nervous system, it sounds like. There was still connection there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you both have children. So things started to get a little dicey with navigating a blended family with the needs of his children and your children. And basically, there were some challenges with getting along with his children. Is that true?
Yeah. And it was, my child was old enough that she was on her own. So it was me navigating mostly one of his children. The other two were in and out of the picture, but there was one that was spending a lot of time at home.
And this child was challenging for you. The relationship wasn't easy. Is that what I heard?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. And what specifically about that relationship with the child was hard for you? What behaviors were going on there that you found particularly?
She tried to get rid of me.
So she did not like you. And how did she try to get rid of you? What did she say or do?
She was just very mean to me. So I think she was hoping that I would give up and go away. But I spoke to him and said, you know, I spent a lot of years in an abusive relationship, and be goddamned if I'm going to let this young person abuse me all over again. Like, forget it. I'll exit. I'm okay with that. I'll leave. But he, at that point, wanted to be with me. So he did what he thought he could to make it okay.
So did you feel protected? Did you feel like he was able to help you make that relationship easier?
He did the best he could.
Mm-hmm. So you were satisfied.
And this was prior. This was prior to the incident we already spoke about.
Okay. All right. Now you kind of jumped your story up to 2022. So there were 5 years that went by. How would you categorize your relationship during those 5 years? Because there was the 11 years that led up to this incident in 2017. And then there were like 5 years that things sort of settled back into a relationship. Would you qualify it as positive, negative, or neutral?
Neutral. Like, looking back is a lot easier than, you know, being in it. I think I was just comfortable because he's a very stable person. His stable presence allowed me to do all of my exploring with my personality and my learning and my growing. But I couldn't bring him along with me. He just kind of maybe withdrew more and more. We did less things together. And so I did more self-exploration. I spent more time with my friend and my mom and filled my own cup.
And what made him a stable person in your mind? What characteristics led to you describing him that way?
A strong, steady presence, reliable.
Reliable in what way?
He was always there. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah, by always there, meaning he was always there for you emotionally. Like, if you had an emotional need, was he able to hold you in that?
No, he was there physically.
Physically. Okay, so it was a presence. Yeah. How about financially?
He held his own, which was very thankful because, again, men in the past, I always had to take care of them.
Okay. So he was financially stable and he was like a physical presence that was there. Comforting. But emotionally, the intimacy was not what you might have wanted.
Correct.
Okay. And have you ever been in a relationship with a man who had an emotional presence that was good for you and was what you needed and wanted?
No.
No. And have you ever had those emotional needs met by anyone? Who are the people in your life that have been able to hold you and meet you emotionally?
I suspect I could say yes for my really good friend and my mom more so now, maybe not when I was young.
What happened when you were young with your mom? Like, why Was that relationship harder? Like when you were a teenager, for example, or a kid, how was that relationship with your mom?
I remember it as being mostly fine, but she tells me things from her point of view that maybe help me understand a little better. I just felt like, you know, she was always right. And when she said something, it would turn out that she was right. So I had a little bit of anger towards the fact that maybe I couldn't explore, or if I explored, what's the sense? Because she was always right anyways.
What was her perspective? Why did she find you to be somewhat challenging? What behaviors did she report?
I don't think she found me challenging. She found herself challenging, like her, you know, her own trauma and her own issues, being able to show love. We didn't hug or anything until I was a teenager, when another friend of my daughter's came into our life who was very huggy, and she introduced hugging into our lives. So I guess it was all very cool before that. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew she loved me. I knew my dad loved me, you know, but there wasn't maybe the emotional connections.
Yeah. So in your relationship with your mom, it just sounds like your mom had a lot of strong opinions, and that she didn't really let you, like, that need to be heard or to be seen or to kind of have some autonomy or choice maybe wasn't what you wanted. Is that what I was hearing in relationship to your mom?
Not necessarily. Sorry to be oppositional.
No, it's fine.
But she was just, I don't think she shared a lot of opinions, but the ones that she did share turned out to be right. And as a teenager, I just didn't appreciate that.
Yeah. It's kind of like, oh, damn it. I had bad judgment here and mom was right and I wanted to be right. More that kind of thing.
Yes, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. And how old were you when you had your first intimate relationship, your boyfriend?
18.
Yeah. Has most of your life been an intimate partnership, or has most of it been not an intimate partnership?
Yes.
So that's been always important to you, to have an intimate partner?
Yes.
Okay.
Although my most recent, the intimacy died.
And by intimacy, are you talking about physical intimacy or emotional intimacy or both?
Physical.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And the physical intimacy, has that always been important to you?
Yes, because it was my understanding of how to stay connected.
Mm. And so once you weren't physically intimate anymore, did that just kind of dwindle, or was there something that happened and then there was no more physical intimacy after that?
Funny enough, it was 2018. There might have been one occurrence.
Okay. So you didn't have any physical intimacy since 2018.
Right.
And did you ever talk about wanting that or getting curious about why that did disappear?
Not quite brave enough to do that. I'm maybe alluded to it a couple of times, but didn't get any response. I remember making a physical attempt and didn't get response that I thought would have led to anything. So I just backed off. So I basically just accept things for what they are in the moment and don't push the envelope.
Okay. Thank you. Denzel, anything you want to ask more about or any reflections coming up before we move up to August 2022?
I'm seriously just absorbing all of this. I feel like, yeah, right now I'm just absorbing all of it. And Kara's asking really great questions. In fact, like, there was one time where I was going to ask the exact same question that you had just jumped forward to ask. So yeah, I guess for right now,
excellent,
we're going to do 2022. I might data dump at the end.
Perfect. Yeah, I'm counting on it. Okay. So yeah. And what I'm just noting is that I think that different people are different in relationships. Like, it's interesting to me that from 2018 to 2022, that you weren't having emotional needs met and you weren't having physical needs yet met, and yet you chose to stay in the partnership. And I'm just curious, what needs were being met that had you choose to stay? How would you describe your reason for staying?
The comfort.
So what I'm talking about are social, our instinctual drives here as well. So what's coming up for me is that I'm wondering if self-preservation might be last in the stack or could be the blind spot. Because the self-preservation instinct is really about, but at the same time, while I'm speaking out loud, I'm like, or it could be dominant. So, you know, I want to just get a little bit curious about this, because if you were worried that you would be able to financially support yourself or sort of make it on your own without him, that would be a reason that many people stay with their partners. On the other hand, if really what you were longing for was like predictability, routine, and just not having anything be different, that could be a very nine-ish quality. And that can be, we talk about the vice at 0.9 to be sloth. And so even if I'm not getting all of these different needs met, we kind of like forget about what our needs are when we're in that 0.9 space. And we just want the comfort and the predictability and the routine of the relationship, which is also your SI tertiary. So, you know, having that predictability and routine would also be something that might be a very comforting place for you. So I'm just curious, like, as you hear me say this, what was your confidence level during that period of time, like 2018 to 2022? Did you feel like you would be absolutely fine financially and taking care of yourself? Or was there going to be some concern around, do I have the resources and the skills and the ability to make it on my own without this man?
I probably would be a bit concerned that maybe financially it would be difficult.
Yeah. And since your separation, it has been hard to find a place that you want to live and to just make sure that all of those survival, you know, self-preservation needs are met in the way that's comfortable for you. Is that accurate?
The climate is a lot worse now than it was 5 years ago. Everything is a lot more expensive now.
Yeah. And so I'm just naming that could be nine or that could be self-pres last. Just that, where is my attention going? Like, what is my priority? On the one hand, we're seeing that the stability and predictability and routine was important, but it sounds like the social instinctual needs, which are those needs around like friendship and those needs around like, I help you out, you help me out. Did you still feel like he, like, what, did he have a love language around acts of service? Did he support you? So that was another thing. So yeah, there was a social instinctual connection, it feels like. You guys were friends and you helped each other out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If like, because I had this small business, he was always there to do the parts that I needed help with that he was good at. So okay. Yeah, he'd make me anything I needed.
And what was he good at that you weren't as competent with?
Well, I did upholstery, so a lot of the base stuff, like, you know, cleaning up the metal frame of a seat and painting it, like, that would have been just tedium and awful for me, but he didn't have any problem with it. He made it beautiful, and then I could build on it.
And what kind of upholstery did you make? What did you love about working with upholstery?
I'm not sure I loved it.
Why did you do it? Why upholstery?
I don't know, because I started it, and I guess it was some of the exploration stuff, like just wanted to keep doing it. I wanted to get better at it, wanted to accomplish it. I also did cushions and boat seats, and so some stuff was easier than and boat tops. Some stuff was easier than others.
And did you, I mean, when I think of upholstery and I think of covers and I think There's a certain aesthetic. There's a certain beauty to that. Was that a piece that you enjoyed? Or like, how would you evaluate, I did a good job? Was it the craftsmanship? Or was it sort of the look of it? Like, were you paying very close attention to your stitches and details? Or were you paying attention to sort of how the colors and the patterns all came together at the end?
There wasn't a lot of color and pattern because most things were black or solid color. Yeah, there wasn't a lot of that. It didn't have wrinkles in it because, you know, I see some stuff and it has wrinkles. It's like, no, it had to look good. It had to look right.
So these were practical pieces is what I'm hearing. Okay.
Yeah.
So when I'm thinking about sexual instinctual energy, there's a few things about the sexual instinct that we sometimes look at is, first of all, it does sound like a one-to-one connection is very important to you. You know, there's nothing that I'm hearing that makes me think that you would have been okay if he had said, you know what, this woman actually fills needs A, B, and C for me, and you fill needs X, Y, and Z. So if it's okay with you, I'd like to be able to have a relationship with both of you. Like, that sounds like a no-go is what I'm sensing. Or what if he had said that? How would you have responded?
I probably would have tried and then went crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's sexual instinct oftentimes. You know, it's a very like honed in kind of instinct. Sexual instinct also tends to express itself in some sort of creativity, some kind of flavor, some kind of something that just feels uniquely me. I'm curious, when you did your profiling session and you landed on introverted feeling as your dominant function, I'm curious from either Marlene or Denzel, because I know you have your notes from that session, Denzel. Mm-hmm. How did that express itself? Like for the people that are learning Myers-Briggs in our audience, tell us some things about introverted feeling dominant people that ended up helping you to land on that type. And yeah. Marlene, why don't you share first? And then Denzel, why don't you share what your notes were on it? Yeah.
I don't really know. just, I think it may have come from my strong opinions on that I didn't want to get vaccinated. I think that's where it came from. It did not feel right to me to get vaccinated. Therefore, don't tell me what to do with my body. Like, I did not come from that choice at anything logical or scientific or anything else like that. It was just like, don't tell me what to do. And I think that's how I came to that introverted. Yeah.
What do you have from your notes, Denzel? What made you guys land on introverted feeling?
Yeah. So it was interesting because, you know, we loosely landed on Enneagram 9 for her. And Enneagram 9 is not really a type that's often aware of their emotions and their feelings and everything. But what we really saw was a lot of inferior TE. So that drive to like really kind of like go after what she wants and, you know, pretty much kind of like assert some sort of like control, some sort of like dominance in a situation. That was like really something that I from the notes, like it wasn't really prevalent. And I remember asking her too, like, oh, like would other people consider you to be like bossy? And then she was like, oh, no. Well, maybe just my grandchildren. And that's usually like a common thing for very low like TE users. She also was like very like, you know, kind of like go with the flow type of person. And those are usually like, you know, common for perceiver types. With introverted feeling, however, it was from what I can remember and even from what I'm seeing here, it's such an interesting paradox when you see it with Enneagram 9. And I actually have a INFP younger sister who's an Enneagram 9 as well. And so it's like a lot of times they can be aware of their emotions and how they feel and everything. But when they see that it's conflicting with somebody else's, that's when they're unconsciously narcotizing it. So it's almost like FE9s, they don't even get to figure out like, oh, this is how I feel or anything like that before it's like narcotized because they're immediately already looking at somebody else's emotions and stuff like that. So it's like their desires like don't even come up. Whereas like for FI9s, it seems like, oh, I think I know. And then all of a sudden somebody else's desires might pop up. And then before you know it, then they're narcotizing their own desires. And so I think that's like one big difference that I was seeing there, where she does have access to her introverted feelings. She does have access to like knowing like, oh, this is how I feel about this and this is what I want and et cetera. But then the extroverted thinking as an inferior function like was difficult for her to like, oh, it's just right out of reach. Like I'm trying, but it's just not exactly there. And then the introverted feeling blended in with that nine. It's like, okay, I know what my values are. And I kind of like, I have like this identity thing that like I'm trying to like really hold on to. But then at the same time, it's slipping through my fingers as somebody else's needs come up. And then we could even see that now, like with her, you know, with the partner that you had, where as things came up, like you were even open. It's like, I mean, yeah, you know, I'd try it, but then eventually I would just go crazy. Whereas like, you know, there's like a lot of people who's like, no, that's, I already know I don't like this. I already know I wouldn't want this. And they'll just stamp their foot on it. And it's like, some people, I feel like, you know, like, just like you said, like I'd try it and then I'd go crazy. Cause you know that you wouldn't like it. Whereas like there's some people who wouldn't even know if they wouldn't really like it, but you would be doing it to try it so that you could narcotize your own emotions and avoid conflict. So that's where like, you know, a lot of the FI could be. And then, you know, if there was like, again, like a little bit more assertiveness, it's like, if the TE was like maybe a little bit higher, it's like, oh no, I don't think that this is right. I don't think that we should do this. Like it would be a little bit more assertive. Is that tracking for you, Marlene? Feel free to tell me where I'm totally off.
Yeah.
Let me ask a little bit about your experience with the COVID vaccine. I heard you say that you did not want to receive the vaccine. Did you tell other people about that, or did you keep that private to yourself?
No, I told, because that's when I was working at the other job. And when they started telling us that was going to happen, like I used strong language right in front of my manager, and that's not me. But that was me. Mm-hmm. Don't even bring that to me because I don't want it. Don't tell me.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
We're now, a women's organization standing up for women's rights, and you're telling me.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I can hear that just really didn't land with you. So I want to fast forward. What ended up happening in 2022 is that you and your partner are currently not together, and he actually is starting a relationship now with that woman that he had first contacted in 2018, although you don't believe that there was infidelity going on for that 5 years or the 4 years in between. Is that correct?
I believe him when he says that he didn't make contact until he felt that he was done. But she was always there in the background. She was on the Facebook, even if I don't know whether they were friends on Facebook, but I know her sister was friends on Facebook. Therefore, I'm pretty sure she was a Facebook friend, but maybe there wasn't like discussion or talking, but you know how Facebook is, like you can see what the other person's shares, right? So I'm thinking, you know, everything I shared, every time I tagged him in what wonderful things he did for me, because I did that. Oh, you know, thank you for doing this and thank you for doing that. And you're such a wonderful person and blah, blah, blah. And I probably built him up, and she was probably reading all this stuff. And I dug my own grave.
And why did you put on Facebook the wonderful things that he did for you? Like, if you look, check inside, like, you know, what was the underlying motivation when you would put the wonderful things he did for you on Facebook?
Showing appreciation, because he wasn't good at receiving. So that was my way of showing him.
Yeah. And when you say you dug your own grave, were you saying that I made him look so good that of course she would want him and come after him? Is that what you meant?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So you were wanting to show him appreciation, but you actually think you made him more attractive to other women. And so there's some regret around that.
Yeah.
Okay. And so since the separation, what was the moment when he decided he was done with you? Do you know what that moment was? Like, did he tell you that? Or because he didn't contact her supposedly until he was done. Do you know what led to him deciding to be done?
I said that I was going to move in with my daughter because she wouldn't be able to afford a place on her own. For me, that meant I was supporting my daughter. It didn't mean that I was leaving him. For him, it meant that I was done and I was leaving him.
Yeah. And he didn't want your daughter to live in your home. Is that what I was hearing?
That's true. It went from the two of us, low energy, to massive amounts of energy. And we're both introverted. It was hard. It was hard for me too. But I spent my life putting men before my daughter, and I wasn't fucking going to do that again.
Yeah.
So then he decided, so that was like a big kind of blow up point because your daughter couldn't stay there. And now you did not want to put men before your daughter. So you were going to move in with your daughter. It was in that moment that he decided he was done. And so you moved in with your daughter and now he's engaged with this other woman. But no, you're not living with your daughter. And how did that emerge? Why are you not living with her now?
Due to things that mistakes that I didn't want to repeat that were in his past, if I was coming to a conclusion, I tried sharing it with him so that perhaps we could talk about it. But because I kind of have this hit and run style of trying to talk about stuff when it's highly emotional, I would go and say something and then I would retreat. He never came back to try to get more information from me. He just perceived whatever he wanted to perceive from what I said. And by the time I was able to regroup and come back and start talking again, it was too late. So he took what I said as rock solid gospel, whereas what I was putting out there was, here's what I'm thinking. Can you talk to me about this? Because I wanted him to offer solutions and discussion. And then none of that happened. I didn't have a plan to move in with my daughter. It was, I would like to do this. You know, what do you want? What do you think? But I didn't say those words. I just said, here's where I'm at. Because I was pretty, I was feeling pretty frozen out by then too. Yeah.
Frozen out, meaning he just wasn't communicating with you about what was going on in his inner world.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm imagining that there was a lot of what I call alarmed aloneness in those moments, just really navigating on your own and not feeling like you're navigating it in partnership.
Yeah. And I think we were both feeling that way because I've been able to talk to him since then. And he was really lonely during that time. So he wouldn't talk to me, but I couldn't talk to him either. And it just broke down.
Did you guys ever consider couples coaching at this point in time?
I think it happened so fast that it didn't occur to me. And when we were in that la-la land comfort, I didn't realize that it was even falling apart at that point.
Mm.
But I did perceive that my daughter moving in was going to make or break it. And I did perceive that it probably would break it.
Yeah.
I am curious, what do you think could have been a factor that might have changed anything back then?
I think if, you know, he could have said, I'm being triggered by these things. Well, he did say that, sorry, but I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know where to take it. I think if we had someone else to talk to, then maybe we could have worked through all our trigger points. I don't know if it would have come to a different end, but it would have certainly felt better to have understanding.
And do you feel like because I know you said that it kind of like snuck up on you. So that's why you didn't seek like couples coaching. But I'm also curious, like, do you feel as if because you two are both introverted, then maybe that's also why you kind of didn't have the idea like, oh, I can talk to somebody about this. Like, do you think that that probably plays a part, or maybe is that like a little bit irrelevant here?
Probably. You know, I would talk to my friend a lot. I just didn't, I don't know why. I don't know why I didn't click in that. I don't know why I didn't click in that we should try harder to talk to each other. I just figured he's stonewalling me, and I just kind of accept things for what they are. And I guess I just kind of figured that when it all settled, that we would get to a point where we could talk it out. I just figured it would happen eventually, but I didn't count on his response.
So the two of you had 15 or 16 years before coming to this separation point. We've heard a lot about your pain points and what was hard for you in the relationship. If we were talking to him, what do you think he might have said was hard for him in the relationship? How might he have wanted things to be different?
I can only guess. I wonder, and I asked this question but didn't get a response. Like, was I too strong? Was I too independent? Like, that's what I wonder. If when she was talking to him, he felt needed, and did I not convey need?
Yeah.
Did you see like any, well, I guess you kind of answered this at the beginning, because I was asking like, did you have any assumptions of what it could have been like, that like the what need she was meeting of his? But yeah, I guess the question I was going to ask, which might be related, is if you saw any differences maybe between like how she was interacting with him versus how maybe you interact with him. And from there, it's like, you know, like, did you automatically start to detect like, oh, well, maybe I should be more like this, or like, it wouldn't have helped if I was more like this, or, you know, things of that nature? Was that not something that really like came to you?
I mean, there was a massive amount of communication, and I probably don't communicate enough. I can talk to my friend all day, but she's interested in some of the same things I am. If I start talking personality stuff and his eyes start glazing over, then why would I try? And if he's not interested, why would I try to push it on him? Because he's not interested, why push it? You know, like, so, I mean, personality stuff is a relatively new thing, but I've always been like metaphysical. And so I can only guess that I've tried to engage in conversation before, and when the eyes glaze over, I give up.
Got it.
I have, as far as him talking to me, he would tell me about work stuff and I would try really hard to be interested.
Yeah. So I'm hearing authenticity is really important to you.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I really did just want to thank you for coming on here to share all of that. And it's just interesting, because as I've been listening to this whole fiasco, it's, my mind has been really digging into and processing a lot of the things that have been said just now. And then even like some things that like, I guess like how like, oh, well, why didn't this happen? And why didn't that happen? And I think that it's also interesting too, seeing that, you know, I'm an ENFJ. So you would be my shadow type as an INFP. And that's like, for me, a lot of things are like, even though we're both nine, I'm seeing it as like, oh, well, why didn't you do this? You know, like a very like FE, maybe NI response. And then for you, it's like, oh yeah, you know, I don't know. And it's like, and then also the idea of like, how you said, yeah, it just all happened so fast. So I didn't even really track that this was really going to happen in this way. Whereas like, I guess for me as an FE user, I feel like I'm always tracking the temperature of the relationship. And it just makes me like wonder like, huh, also like what type he could have been, and you know what made him not track, you know, what was happening. And then, or maybe he was tracking it, but then he didn't speak up about it. But then either way, like, he's probably still sought something outside. But then from there, you would have still maybe tried to accommodate just because you loved him like so much. But then you would have probably gone crazy if that was the case. But then, you know, would you have been capable of actually meeting the need that he really actually wanted? But would he have accepted it from you, or would he have rejected it because it's just something that you can't do? Or even if you could do it, it would be inauthentic for you. So it's just all of these different like things that my mind is just like, oh man, so many, I guess, like just thoughts and ideas and like what ifs of like, what could have happened over here? And why didn't this happen? And what about this? And, but I do love that with everything, you really did put your foot down when it came to your daughter. Like, you let things, you let things kind of like move for a little bit and like, okay. But then I felt the emotion come from you the moment that you spoke of your daughter, the moment that you were like, okay, well, I'm not letting this happen. Not to her. Okay, fine. I had this. Okay, fine. I went through this. Maybe she even had a little bit, but no more. And like putting your foot down in that way. And then I also even like still find it interesting how now y'all are able to talk and like kind of like go and like be like, yeah, you know, I was kind of like lonely back then. Oh yeah, you know, me too. And yeah, why didn't we do this? Oh yeah, I don't know. You know, but, and it's just, I guess it's very fascinating to me to hear from the other side in this way, but not in like a judgmental way, like you should have done this, but literally just like in a fascinating aspect that my mind is still processing. And it's further showing me just how differently different people can approach relationships, and how, you know, if we don't know, like there's different things that can really be quote unquote common sense to us. And there's other things that might not really be that common to us. Like in general, like I remember I was walking through Kroger or something like with my mother one time, who's an ISFJ, and for about 20 minutes, maybe it was shorter. I'm probably exaggerating. It was a while back, but it was a pretty like long time. It felt like it because I wasn't really like there with her. I wasn't really like present. I was just kind of like following her around. But eventually I finally did tune in. I'm like, Mom, what are you looking for? She's like, oh yeah, I'm looking for tomatoes or something like that. And I was like, within 5 seconds, I was like, excuse me, sir, you know, one of the workers there, I was like, can you tell me where the tomatoes are? He's like, oh yeah, in aisle 5, you know, whatever. And she's like, oh, okay. And we went there and we found what she was looking for. And I just thought to myself, why didn't she just ask in the first place? But then I know there's a lot of situations that I have where people get on me about stuff like, well, why didn't you just do this? Or why didn't you do, I'm like, man, I didn't even think about that. Like, I don't know why. So this really was highlighting, like, you know, I wonder what other people could be going through similar things. Somebody who might be listening to this right now is like, huh, when was the last time that I was tracking my relationship in this way? Like, or, you know, I didn't even know that was a thing. You know, like, I want, like, what precautions could I take to, like, you know, maybe change things before maybe I get to this point? And I also love how, even though you've gone through that, you've been coping very well, it seems like. I don't know if maybe like you would agree, but it seems like you've been able to manage your way through the forest, even with the scars. What do you think about that though?
I agree, because it is my desire to work through everything and not have anything stuck in my body. When we did talk after the fact, like, I think he had gone to see her a couple of times by then, I think I diffused any blaming, because I said, you know, I know that I did this wrong and this wrong, and I wonder what, you know, why, you know, why did you respond this way? And so I was very quick to take blame on anything that I may have done, perceived, or like whether I knew I was doing wrong or not. I put it out there. So I kind of freed him to be able to say the same thing. And, he's a man of integrity. Mm-hmm. So he did not want me to perceive that he had moved on before a certain point. And he wanted me to know that, you know, I was not unfaithful to you. Like it was very important for him to put that forth.
Yeah.
So in his way, he was not unfaithful. Mm,
I see.
Wow. Now, Marlene, you've been sharing that in this recent phase, though, things aren't completely worked out between the two of you. It sounds like you've been having quite a lot of emotion and trying to sort of metabolize and be with and model how you're being with your emotions by posting some things about that on Facebook. And that has been interpreted by he and some other people that you know to be painful, that he was imagining that people were knowing that you were talking about your experience with him and he was feeling somewhat exposed.
Yeah.
Or is that not accurate?
That wasn't him. No, that wasn't him. That was another person who assumed that what I was posting, which what I was posting was, today I am feeling happy. Today I'm feeling sad. Today I'm feeling, so it was the current emotion. Yeah. And then I would I would say, so I'm feeling this and I do not want it to stick in my body. So here's my process as to how I'm releasing it. Like with the anger, I said I was going to go for a walk or a run. And because I didn't want it to stick in my body, I don't want disease. When it was, you know, so that was what I was posting. I wasn't posting, you know, oh, somebody did something horrible to me. Yeah. I didn't, like, nothing like that. No names, no nothing.
And so this other person's just imagining, like, what did they take offense with? What was bothering them?
She said, reading your post, I can only assume that you're talking about him and what you're going through with him. And you should have known better. And when I didn't have a very good response, she told me I was a horrible person and that I deserved whatever I got and that I didn't deserve him in the first place.
So I'm hearing that you really value this authentic expression of what your experience is, and yet you're holding him with care and didn't reference anything regarding him, but that just having you name this wide variety of emotions that you're having, just like all of us as humans have, that you've been having to receive a little bit of feedback that this has been activating for other people, specifically that know him.
That was one person out of lots of people who gave comments like, thank you for sharing. Thank you for being so honest. Thank you for helping me see your process and how it might be able to help me. And other people say, well, this is how I process. So out of lots of positive response, that was the only negative.
And so the positive response is fueling you to really know that your intention here is clean and that, you know, it's really coming from this desire to serve and support others that are also dealing with challenging emotions. Because I think that that's something that introverted feeling is particularly gifted at, is being with all the feels. And I'm really seeing that this is a way that you're modeling for others in the community how we can be with these complicated emotions, all the way from happy to sad to angry to all of it. And so this is something that you particularly enjoy. And I was highlighting that because that did seem like a gift of the introverted feeling function, is that we really can demonstrate that all emotions are welcome, and that let's talk about how we're with them. Is that how it is for you?
Yes. And, you know, I used to work with women and I didn't feel like I did a good enough job. So it's kind of like, this is kind of post, but it's kind of like, now I can do that in an indirect way. But I do have to say that those comments have injured my moving forward, and I don't know if I should share. Also, I find that when I go back and I communicate with him, I find myself reattaching, and then I have to remind myself all over that not to.
Yeah, it's so tender.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, especially as an INFP, that it's almost always going to be, because FI and SI as a combination will always make you seem like it'll always essentially make it seem as if you're right there in the experience once again. And so I can only imagine. And, you know, I was actually a little bit surprised with how well you were able to talk about this so extensively. And that's kind of why I was also saying, like, yeah, it seems like you're really like coping, like managing well, because usually it's very difficult for INFPs, even after they've processed such things, to talk about things they've gone through, because then all of that SI and FI emotions just rise back up with the memories, and it's very detailed, you know? And again, if we're throwing in the 9, usually you're kind of asleep to these emotions and these feelings, you know, it's kind of like, oh yeah, you know, like in our profiling session, you literally said something along the lines of, yeah, if it's not really convenient, then you just kind of ignore it when it comes to your emotions. But sometimes stuff like this, well, it hits too deep and you can't 9 your way out of that.
Exactly. Yeah.
I really admire and appreciate your boldness. And I know that you are our first guinea pig here, but we actually plan to make these kind of like a 3-parter, if I understand correctly, from the last conversation that we've been planning this, where it's like in the second podcast, it's actually me and Kara reviewing and kind of like, you know, commenting on, you know, what we had just talked about over here, which usually also works better for me as an NI user. It's like, oh, from re-listening to the podcast and like, you know, all the notes I took and like, and thinking over things and stuff like that. These are some things that I was noticing that, you know, in the moment I wasn't able to present here, and boom, boom, boom. And then we kind of like really go deep, certain things that maybe we didn't even address audio in this interview. And then we return for the final part of all of this, you know, the third one, where it's like, hey, so after listening to the part 2 and everything, then what did you think about that? And then we have like a final third conversation where we really just kind of put a bow on everything. So I'm already like looking forward to the post-processing that's going to be occurring after this really deep dive interview here. And again, I just really wanted to say that I appreciate you coming on to like share your story and going back into that uncomfortable territory of your mind and heart to help other people who might be listening and might have also gone through the same thing, or might be going through it now, or might do it in the future. But now from hearing you, it could stop.
That would feel good too. Of impact like that.
Yeah.
Denzel, I was wondering, you so beautifully described that loop that introverted feeling and introverted sensing can get into. And oftentimes when we're in the loop, we take that secondary function to help us get out of it. When you're coaching people, an INFP in particular, how might they use that extroverted, intuiting parent function to help break that loop? What have you seen be effective for anyone that's resonating with all of this?
Yeah. So with using extroverted intuition, it's kind of, especially in this sort of situation, right now you're looping with, it's almost like extroverted intuition expands your FI and your SI, right? So if you right now have this like small pool of emotions and memories and, you know, things of that nature, then of course you're going to always like, oh, I'm bumping into this memory again, and I'm bumping into this memory again. But when you go out there and you start making a whole bunch of new memories, a whole bunch of novel ideas, a whole bunch of like creative, like, you know, like just creating like new things and new experiences, then now that pool becomes so much wider, so much deeper, that it's kind of hard to bump into that same rock over and over again, because you have so much larger swimming territory. And so that's where that extrovert intuition can come in. So instead of you sitting in maybe that same river and always like reviewing and revising, like, yeah, this is what happened and this is what happened, it's more of like a get out there and really allow yourself to live life again and throw yourself into something new and brave and allow your imagination to just run wild and like almost daunt and scare yourself with just how far you're pushing your mind and learn more about yourself, almost to the point where it's like, wow, yeah, like I remember everything that we just talked about. But man, I've just, within the past few months, I have experienced so many different things. I have explored so many different concepts. I have like really just gotten into so many different types of ideas that I almost don't have time to sit here and, I'm not saying that you do this on a regular basis or anything, but I almost don't have time to like sit here and sulk about this anymore, because there's so many other fun and optimistic things to explore. And that's another thing. NE is the most optimistic function. Extrovert intuition is the most optimistic function out of all eight. So, and usually when INFPs are in that loop, then they're like, yeah, they're still like, oh, yeah, you know, that happened. I don't know if I could ever get out there again. You know, I don't want to break my heart. That hurts so badly. I never want to, you know, stuff like that. But extroverted intuition gives them that, man, you know, I have this optimism that if I get back out there again, man, things are going to be amazing. Like, and I'm going to find even better and boom, 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 you know, just so many different ideas and like thoughts that will occur from that, like, you know, from being able to get back into an optimistic state of mind and having something to be excited about and to look forward to in this regard. And that'll create new memories. So that, yeah, you'll never exactly like discard this memory, but it's almost a little bit diluted with all of the other great memories that you've now created. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I've been spending a lot of time with my mom, my friend, my granddaughter. I am taking Pilates now. Yeah. At my workplace, but I wasn't doing that before. I was going to go to ecstatic dance, but I got the wrong day. And on the weekend, I'm going to go and do Tai Chi. So definitely, definitely trying to get myself out there. And, you know, of course, listening to the Personality Hacker stuff and learning more about myself and drive as well, and taking an art class.
Nice.
Well,
nice.
Thank you, Marlene. I mean, those, I mean, it sounds really exciting. And, you know, I'm just really celebrating that we were able to go into these really painful parts of your story, but ending it on all of these beautiful things that you have coming up in front of you. So I know that we're at time today, but I just want to thank you for being our first participant, for sharing so vulnerably. It really meets my needs for authenticity and learning. And I just have big gratitude. Thank you.
Yes, same.
Thank you.
If you're enjoying these episodes, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts and various Android platforms. If you leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, it helps a lot. If you have any questions you'd like addressed in a future episode, please email me at social@karenancemd.com. I also offer a wide variety of services at my practice, including typology, Enneagram coaching, nonviolent communication training, and mindfulness trainings for working with stress, anxiety, and food cravings. Please visit my website at karenancemd.com to schedule a free 30-minute consultation if you'd like to work with me in any way. We also have the opportunity for free classes.